on. Here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Don't forget, you can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. Do love to love you. Love to hear from you. What did you find? Women are acting like men had always acted since man started walking erect. Okay. That's not that bad. We're going back 500,000 years ago. Lucky's Auto Service Centers. By the way, it's not easy writing jingles. I'll tell you right now. I don't know why. I bit off more than I could chew. I'm driving the car just trying to come up with it. It's not easy to make it catchy. Sorry, I was going to steal State Roofing. I was going to do that. Then I was Keel Mortgage. I was going to slip that in there.
Oh, I got a good one.
Yeah.
Kids for Cars.
So for kids.
No, I know, but you turn it on its head.
That's good. The Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations. Jingle coming tomorrow.
You turn in your kid, get a car.
That's good. All right. Why don't we ever take something you say and replay it? Why isn't my stupid thing?
What are you talking about? That's all you do.
Selling. Well, I got a lot of words that rhyme with Bucky's. You want some help with the jingle?
No. All right, I heard you yesterday. Were you on Dory's show talking about this?
Yes, I was. I was a little surprised that Jacob didn't ask me to talk about it on
your
show
yesterday.
I'm
the one that asked you.
To do it yesterday.
First of all, why didn't you sign up for this bi-mile thing?
For the pilot project?
Yeah.
Just because I didn't. I didn't want to be bothered with it.
You're a traffic guy. You would have been. Then you'd be like, and then I thought I'd give it a try.
Well, I don't know.
All right, whatever.
Yeah, I just decided not to do it.
So the results are in, and now where are we?
Well, the results are kind of in. It was, I was expecting while listening to the Transportation Commission hearing on Tuesday that we were going to get some hard results. Okay, we had this many people do this kind of thing, and this they did this, and they used this, and they liked that. Basically, the only real nugget of news that came out of Tuesday was of the people who took part in this, of the 6,700 or so, and then the 2,000 that they pooled from to drive, of those who then responded to a survey after it was all done, 68% of them said they prefer this idea as much or maybe not or better than using the gas tax. Mm-hmm. 19% said, no way, let's just stick with the gas tax. Mm-hmm. The other unknown number there, it's not unknown, I'm just not good at math on the fly, they didn't really have an opinion on it one way or the other. So That's really the only nugget.
You always
that came
find that
through.
Interesting. Yes, somebody something. End of the world coming tomorrow. How do you feel about it?
Eh,
I don't have an opinion.
Meh. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but what we've come to is here's just to relay the playing field where mm-hmm. we are is in December, mid-December, we will get the recommendations from the Washington State Transportation Commission, which did this pilot program to charge you by mile instead of using the gas tax. Mm-hmm. They will come up with their recommendations that they will then deliver to the legislature when it starts in January to tell them, okay, this is why we think it's feasible. This is how we think you should progress. Here you go. Take all the information from our pilot plus our recommendations. Go forth and multiply.
Okay.
Is pretty much what they're going to say to the legislature. However, when I listened to this thing, there's so many more questions out there that have to be answered
mm-hmm.
about how this thing is going to work in practicality. I mean, I expected so much more out of this commission hearing about nuts and bolts. What I got was a lot of kind of skepticism of the legislature by these members of the Transportation Commission. Like, well, the gas tax by law, by constitutional law, it's in the state constitution. Mm-hmm. It has to go to road projects. The road usage charge, the pay by mile, is supposed to replace the gas tax.
Uh-huh.
But there's nothing in the legislation or in the constitution where there's enough wiggle room there that the members were worried that the legislature could go, oh, well, that's not the gas tax, and then use the money for the opioid crisis
or housing, it would fall into the general fund.
And so they're like, do we need to create a constitutional amendment? So these are the things they're kind of worrying about going forward before they do their recommendations. The other one is, what do we do about privacy? Because they tested different options here. I mean, you could use just a straight odometer read. You could take a picture of your odometer every month and then send it in. Mm. Or you could use the GPS model, which tracks where you go. So that way you get the most accurate count of how many roads, how many road miles you're mm-hmm. using. Well, they're worried. They don't want that information available to, say, public records requests. They don't want a DA to be able to go back and go, well, geez, that guy was driving near there and there was a crime there, or they're worried about, you know, things like that, or if you could find out your ex by how they're, you know, if you did it right through PDA public mm-hmm. disclosures and things. So, like, do we need to write something to make sure that this information that's tracked cannot be accessible. So they're the private, because obviously there are huge privacy concerns about sticking a GPS that tracks you in your car. And so, you know, there's that in there. And then comes the biggest, I think, issue of all. And this is supposed to replace the gas tax,
yes,
right? That's the plan. However, we knew there's going to be a transition phase where we would have gas tax and road usage charge if they decide to go forward with it. How long would that be? Well, we're hearing that it could be 10 to 25 years where we would have both taxing systems in place. The reason? Roads that we've already repaired or projects that we've already been done have been bonded and tied to the gas tax specifically. And until that debt is retired, you can't get rid of the gas tax because it's spelled out in law. That money comes from the gas tax. You can't just get rid of it. It's kind of like the Sound Transit idea of the way they bonded to, you know, car values.
Yeah.
So then what do you do during that 10 to 25 years where I'm driving a car and I'm paying the road usage charge, but I'm also paying the gas tax at the pump?
Well, they came up with a really convenient thing, which is at the end of the year, you send in your receipts.
I send in my receipts. Who's going to do that?
Nobody.
I mean, you'd have to go. So it would be up to the driver then to go back and go, well, I drove this. Here's what my road usage charge is. Here's what I paid for gas.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to ask for refunds or credits on the back end. And I don't know many people that find that palatable. I barely send in my receipts to the office here for the roads I drive my own car. I mean, I don't even get, I don't even charge them for mileage. And this would be so much money. So I can't imagine.
This is the preliminary stages, right?
So, correct.
So Oregon jumped the gun on this, and they were the first ones in with this program. They were also the first ones in that in 1919, they applied taxes to the gas in order to pay for the roads. That's what Oregon did.
Well, they're the first to actually go forward instead of just having a pilot, but going forward with several thousand people actually using money. Because our pilot program and their pilot program was all kind of tabletop with the money being, you know, monopoly money. It was fictitious.
Imagine. But overall, what I like this program because I think what eventually it starts to do is you'd almost like surge pricing. You start to see that you would, if driving at a certain time, the price could be different than driving at another time, which would then alleviate congestion, which is the biggest problem of people's biggest complaints about the road. It's not the quality of the road necessarily. It's the fact there's too many people in front of me on that road.
That is true. But congestion pricing screws the poor. I mean, if you think about it, who can afford to pay that $10 in the express toll lanes? Who can afford to pay that if they decide to toll all of downtown Seattle streets? That screws the poor because they have to pay it. And so, and now, if the money were just going to roads and not using it as congestion pricing, I think people could be a little bit, but only if it got rid of the gas tax.
Okay.
And just reading through the comments, everyone is just like, oh, yeah, like they're going to get rid of it. I mean, once we've had it for 25 years in this dual system, it'll never go away. And the other thing is we don't even know how much it's going to be per mile. That has to be set by the legislature. I mean, during the pilot project, it was 2.4 cents a mile, which pencils out to about what you would have paid per mile per pump.
When do they want to have all this in place? Because I know they said that they're running into a serious deficit, not having enough cash for the roads and the infrastructure.
Well, the thing is I mean, we've heard it could start as early as 5 years from now once they figure out all the hurdles, maybe getting electric vehicles on board first, maybe getting the state motor pool up on this first. We still have to figure out what commercial truck drivers are going to do because they're going to still pay at the pump. Out-of-state drivers would still pay at the pump unless, and here's the big thing. Sorry, I know more about this than I
this
was
is more than
about
this is far more than
That's funny because I have a question.
There are 11 states. No, there are 11 states right now, the Western states, that are working in conjunction behind the scenes to create a road usage charge for all 11 so that when you drive from Washington into Oregon, it knows and your road miles dollar goes to Oregon. You drive into Idaho, it goes to Idaho. So it knows where you're going and they're trying to work together.
Right,
that's
like,
the long-term plan.
Tom, I have one, not one of these five-parters.
No. Just
I give you a five-part answer
anyway. I have a legislative solution to the dilemma.
Yes.
Why can't we redefine gas
tax
to incorporate the mileage usage?
Well, that's what that's going to be their one of their recommendations. Let's handle this, and that's recommend that to the lawmakers to make them.
Yes.
Because that seems like the easiest fix.
Yeah.
They still have all the technological stuff to figure out and the privacy issues, too. But, that would seem very easy to take
Tell
care
them
of.
To come to Tom and Curley when they want solutions like that.
Sure.
Hey, Chris Sullivan?
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Go Dogs.
Yeah, whatever. Are we going to get a chance to talk about that? I gave you a perfect entree, but maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow.
John got too impatient. Come on.
Trust me. I've forgotten more about the road usage charge than you'll ever know. Come on. This is my job.
Why didn't you sign up for it? All right, moving on.
I'd say I was good at my job.
Wait, the answer was I didn't because I didn't. Thank you. Yeah. Here we go. Danny Westney has. Was this the front of the Seattle Times? Or was the top of the column when you pull up the.
Oftentimes, if it's a compelling column, they put it on the front page.
Yeah.
I don't know if this qualified or not.
So Danny breaks down a story that was in, I guess, the New Republic, explaining this from an individual that worked at Boeing. Said what happened was you had these two different cultures at Boeing. You had the Boy Scouts.
Boeing Boy Scouts.
And then you had the Hunter Killer Assassins. And you had the guys that wanted to sort of follow along on the program and make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and the FAA has their information and we've got our information and we're getting it done, but we're checking each other and everything is above board. Right? We're all going to get merit badges at the end of the completion of this plane because we have followed the proper instructions.
We did a good job for society.
Right. And we have shiny shoes.
And as the person who first coined these two camps says, the Hunter Killer Assassins will destroy the Boy Scouts. That's just what happens. And so Danny takes this kind of metaphor of what happened in the individual Boeing case and then gives another example of Boeing, in effect, putting a metaphoric gun to Jay Inslee's head without Jay Inslee realizing it and giving them a great tax break in this state. Mm-hmm. He says that
biggest tax break to any corporation anywhere in the United States.
Yes,
ever. Yes.
Ever. And he says, The problem is that, you know, the idea is that you're going for the bottom line. And so Boeing was driving a hard bargain here. And then he applies it to politics. And he says that that kind of a short-term gain mentality explains, for instance, things like the big Republican tax cut from a couple of years ago that Trump managed to get through. He says that eventually the effects of the lost revenue on the federal government will be like Boeing shortchanging its engineering expertise, and they'll end up having to go after Social Security and Medicare to save itself because we're more concerned about the initial bottom line than keeping the economy sort of strong. And he says that's that kind of we're living in a Hunter Assassin economy, in effect. Kind of a broad-based political.
What I don't quite understand is to say that Boeing, the hunters and the assassins, do their kids and their wives and the people they love not fly on airplanes? So you do you know that you're sort of cutting costs and you know that the thing is not as safe as it? And what do? You fly only Airbus or you have your own private jet? I'm always shocked when you assume that the evil individuals that are in charge of the budgets, I guess they drive everywhere. They have, are they going to put their wife and kid in an unsafe plane? I mean, I've heard people, Boeing executives say, hold on a second. Yeah. We're flying in these planes, right?
Yeah.
Their own, we want to be able to live as well. So that's what keeps us making sure that the planes are as safe as possible.
Yes. The problem is that if you're going for short-term game, your short-term gain, then you probably, what are the odds? I mean, it is true. Those are horrible, those accidents. But how many people died? Under 400 people died. There are 400,000 probably people that flew in the same time period that didn't die.
Right.
So, I mean, the thing is that I get the point you're trying to make. But in general, the idea is how safe do we need to be? You're being overly safe. If you're going out and it's 20 degree below zero, how many layers of coats and furs do you need to wear? And so they say, well, we can cut back on them and still be relatively safe.
You have two great big businesses, Airbus out of France, which is constantly getting whacked by the World Trade Organization. Boeing also got a kick to the groin from the World Trade Organization as well, receiving that tax break from the state of Washington. They're competing against one another to sell planes and then deliver planes. I saw how many Airbus had sold. I saw how many Boeing had sold, how many they then were able to deliver. They looked at that 737. They said, this is going to be a sweet spot for us. But rather than spending the money and delaying the time, we'll just reconfigure. What is it? 1977 style. We'll just make a few changes on the thing. The engines will be a little higher up and then we'll have to compensate for those types.
I'm sure that Boeing didn't say, okay, 400 lives lost. That's worth the gamble. I'm just sure that they just figured out they didn't think it was really that big a threat, to their bottom line, ultimately, that they thought they could get away with it. What we need, apparently, are more Boy Scouts at Boeing.
I like and the general idea of the one I saw that Sully Sullenberg said a couple of months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Sully said, you know what? Give the FAA more money, staff it better, create a better wall between the manufacturers and the FAA. Just make it stricter and don't have people moving from private corporation to public watchdog. He said just do a better job of having that in place, and then we'll all feel safe that everybody is checking each other along.
But that'll cost us, the taxpayers, money because it's more governmental oversight, and it'll probably cost Boeing more money as well.
By the way, I believe you could probably find some waste somewhere inside the, what is it, $4.1 trillion or whatever they want, is $3.9 trillion budget that the Democrats and Republicans have put forward. There's probably some money in there.
The magic bullet of waste. Anyway, you mentioned Sully Sullenberg. He referred to Max's software system, according to Danny Westneath, as, quote, a death trap. That's from Sully himself. And I don't mean our Sully.
No.
The real Sully.
Mitch McConnell tells the Senate Republicans to be ready for impeachment trial of the president. Here he is.
Under the impeachment rules of the Senate, we'll take the matter up. The Chief Justice will be in the chair. We will have to convene every day, 6 days after out of seven, at 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Senators will not be allowed to speak, which would be good therapy for a number of them. And we intend to do our constitutional responsibility.
Okay, because the House is saying that they're going to move forward on it. They hope to have everything wrapped up by Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, which seems awful.
But when you're not actually voting on it and all of this stuff's being done in secret, they're able to sort of move it through at a pretty rapid rate. The interesting thing is of the 228 Dems that they haven't seen it. Only the small committee has seen and heard the behind-the-scenes testimony.
There are three committees, but there's only one that's the spear point at this.
Right. At what point do you let the other 228 Dems in?
Well, Schiff says that what they're going to do is all these depositions they're taking, they're going to release them all ultimately.
Okay.
What they're now doing, he says he doesn't want people to marshal their evidence based on what other people said. But ultimately, he says they're going to make it all available. I just feel like, so the idea here is that we could have an impeachment by Thanksgiving and
the
clearance
says,
by Christmas.
That's what you want.
Yeah, that's crazy. Crazy fast.
Crazy good.
Well, maybe. In fact, if you actually go to that prayer breakfast in Washington, D.C.,
John. By the way, I'm trying to get you invited.
I would love to go with you, but, you know, it might be one of the first things that President Pence oversees. And he'd be good at a prayer breakfast.
That's February 4th through the 7th. I got invited to the White House, meet the president, and go to the prayer breakfast.
That's right, man.
And I'm trying to get you on.
Tom and Curly live.
By the way,
National
it cost me $900. Can't the station kick in $900 for you?
Absolutely.
See if Ursula's got a free ticket for you. Right back. Muckleshoot Casino says, you know what? I got an idea. Let's sponsor that Tom and Curly show, but let's sponsor when Rachel Bell comes by. She is, she's fun. She's a firecracker, Tom. Her insights, the way she covers stories, razor-sharp personality that she has, and her ability to pun things. And Muckleshoot Casino, that's a pretty good bet that Rachel's going to bring that type of entertainment value to the show.
Because when you think of storytelling, you think of the casinos.
Yes, thank you, Tom. And Rachel's not here for the next month. But doesn't mean we can't go on and try to fill her delicate little shoes. So here
That's
we go.
Right.
The people on Tuesday were still talking about what had happened on Monday night regarding the game between the Lions and Green Bay. In fact, it was the number three thing moving on Twitter was hashtag Lions versus refs.
Yeah.
Because everybody said,
here,
hey, 23-22. Unfair. The call is unfair. They blew it. They blew it big time. Here it is.
Here's 3rd and 4. With Rodgers calmly retreating, looking for something. Flag is down as he throws to the end zone, incomplete.
Illegal use of hands, hands to the face, defense. Number 90. 5-yard penalty from the previous spot. First down, Green Bay.
Comes towards there, it is coming there.
But again, where?
That's on the left shoulder once again.
And this is it with Trey Flowers.
It's a headline story. Week in and week out. Boog, I get it. Mistakes are going to be made, but you know what? We're inside shoulder pads. We're on shoulders here. Just a tough miss.
All right, without going too deep into the weeds, Trey Flowers had been called for another one. Same thing, hands to the face.
Yes.
You're obstructing the view of the receiver from making an attempt to catch the ball.
Well, no, this is actually going after the quarterback. He's rushing the quarterback,
right.
and he's being blocked, and he's holding on, but he's not pushing his. It's first off, it's just not what it was. It wasn't hands to the face. It was on his shoulder blades, but you can't see that from the angle the refs made. Now the problem with this is, so what would happen? That was 3rd down. It was 4th down. It was like a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes left in the game, And because of that, there was a first down and on the goal line, and the Packers just waited and waited and waited until there was no time left on the clock, and then they kicked the winning field goal.
Yes.
Otherwise, they would have kicked the go-ahead field goal and still given Detroit like 2 minutes to go, you know, or a minute and a half to go in the game and get a chance to get their own winning field goal. So this bad call, and it was the second one of the game against that guy, changed the outcome of the game possibly.
But we have, you could probably Google outcome game changed by bad calls, and you would get results within a millisecond, and it would show you probably a whole bunch. Because people now, with the number of cameras and the angles,
yes,
that we are able to sort of second guess, third guess, and Monday morning quarterback these calls, it's unfair to the rest because it's moving at a lickety-split pace.
Yes.
And they're either in position or out of position. There's a pretty good chance that the camera is in the right position.
Yes, because they have so many cameras. But here's the problem, you know, with the whole situation. Roger Goodell says, yeah, we've got to do everything to improve officiating. It's not that hard. We, while the refs were looking at it to decide if that was a good call or not, we on TV saw with all these cameras, look at, he's nowhere near his face mask.
Yeah.
He's nowhere near touching his face. You could easily overturn that call, and they don't.
They would start out with a thing called sky judges. So this is being put out by the ex-NFL ref named John Perry, explains what you would have in place there at a stadium.
Now, should we take a serious look at basically mining and finding 17 sky judges so that they can look down on the field and so that they could say, wait a second, Trey Flowers did not put hands to the face on that play. And we have to do something about it. Maybe not, you're not going to do something about it in the middle of this season. But as you see him right here come around the corner, you see that he did not put a hand to the face. And how that play, how that is not seen and seen incorrectly, that is why the coaches want the sky judge. That's exactly why, because they want an insurance policy.
Sky judge, also known as God.
And these two calls last night, late in this game, are a great example of why that sky judge and the development of people to be those sky judges should be strongly considered by the NFL.
Why not?
Yeah.
Listen, if you're already with the technology for that, we have the cameras.
Yeah.
That helps with it. Use that as a tool rather than as a way of disproving a bad call.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Okay. And nobody says, oh, we're better than the refs. The refs have a hard job. They have to call it the way they see it. And then you have the cameras, and that's why you go. And if everyone else can see it at home,
yeah,
you should be able to do the same thing. As I like the idea of a sky judge. That'll become a new metaphor for
but
the
Supreme
Court.
Would he say there'd be a series of them?
Well, he said they're 17, so I don't know if that means they're 17 on high shots, if he's being funny or what there. But the idea is that clearly the networks have a system where they can go, boom, let's look at this from five different angles,
yeah,
seven different angles. There's no reason why the NFL can't do that as well.
Why? What did they see? What did those NFL guys see? Did anybody explain what they were looking at that
yes,
they made such a bad call?
What they saw, depending on the angle, see, if you're right here, if I've got my head, it looks like I'm doing this.
Yes, you're doing,
really,
you're still doing radio,
this.
Tom. Yeah, okay.
I'm showing you, John.
Oh, well, okay, I'm going to narrate
the idea.
I'll do color play. Tom grabbing himself around
yeah,
the
yeah,
neck,
right, yeah,
and he's got a big
this
handful of that sweater.
yeah,
he's pulling
yeah,
it up
right
towards his face.
Instead of hitting my face, I have a sweater between my hands and my face.
Okay.
So it's the angle that you're looking at.
Would you call
like
that on Tom? Is he doing hands to his
hands
own face?
To the face?
On
himself? He's getting close with his hands close to the face, but not quite hands to the yeah face.
Did Aaron Rodgers have on a big sweater like that?
yeah, with enough a number, though.
Okay. I have a friend of mine who I see only once a year who is an NFL referee.
Wow, really?
And I'm like, hey, I won't even say his name on there. That's how.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about? No. Do you guys like before? No. I said, let me just finish the question. Do you talk about players and their tendencies
yeah
prior to the game? Hey, guys, look out for this or that.
Yeah.
I just want to know, the homework that you do, or you come
yeah
in completely blind?
Yeah.
I mean,
Richard Sherman, never heard of him. What do you mean, handsy?
Here's what I find interesting. In basketball, they'll always say, let them play,
yeah,
right? So there's some pushing and shoving,
yeah,
there's this and that. But there's a certain level that they decide, well, we
yeah
can't go above that. Because we
yeah
start to go, now we're going to get into fisticuffs because tempers are getting into flare. But let them play, fellas, let them play.
Yeah.
Our referees say that, right? Let them play. I wonder in the NFL, you let them play and then all of a sudden they're sort of outside that line. But then that then causes a play to move in a direction that changes the entire outcome of the game.
Well, it could. What they say is that they don't mind. It's just like calling balls and strikes. you have to let the ump decide. The ump decides for you how big the strike zone is. It just has to be consistent, the same strike zone for that particular ump.
Yeah.
The idea is the same thing with, oh, this game. You often hear the announcement, this game is being called very closely, very tightly. And so there is some, because you on the pass interference thing, it's fascinating because there's a lot of bumping and shoving and stuff. And all of a sudden, that was one hand, bump too far.
I remember playing football in high school. We went and we played. We got on the bus, and I don't know why they were doing this. We went to an all-black school, and I remember as the wide receiver, as a tailback on one play, this kid was all over me. I mean, pushing my hip and my hands and everything. And I remember going to the ref, go, "What's going on?" And the ref's like, "It's the way we play." I was like, "Huh?" I mean, because I had experienced that in the sort of hoity-toity suburbs. Right. Everybody was like, "Oh no, 3-foot cushion! Yeah. Oh, you were chuck at the line and then back off."
You were the Boy Scout. I was players. You were being played by the Hunter Assassins.
Shut down. I was like, "Oh, I see. You just put the hand on the guy's hip and you pretty much control everywhere he goes, which is away from the ball."
That's right.
I remember turning and complaining to the ref, and he just looked at me like, welcome. Welcome.
Yeah. Get over yourself.
We went back and beat them in track, though.
Really? Is that right?
Crazy story. Ready? We had not lost a track meet in 14 years. We had the final. We're about to lose to this school. We are about to lose to the school. It is the 4x100 relay. The second guy takes off, and I mean like a shot bat out of hell, and he's making the first turn. He is going to beat us. We will lose our first track meet in like 14 years. As he gets the blind hand off, he brings his hand forward with the baton. And as he does, it flies out of his hands, up in the air, over the fence, and onto I-95. And the coach is like, "All right, okay, got one. Guys, I got a rule. We're not going over to the black neighborhoods anymore." All right, right back. MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. Lots of news happening. Most of the top of the hour on CBS will have Mike Pence announcement about the ceasefire happening there in Syria. Right, Tom?
That's right. We'll talk a bit about it if we have more details.
Okay. Let's see. How much would you want to be paid if your face was being used in perpetuity and it's on a robot? So I wanted to find a perspective. People don't know what the face of the robot would look like, but they would certainly know the Gerber baby face.
Yes.
So the woman is named Ann Turner Cook, and she's been famous since 1928. She was 91 years old at the time of this article. Wow. And she was the face for Gerber. And how much money do you think they paid her in order to have her face on that there?
Wow, that's a long go. I guess $100.
I wish you would take longer to be able to guess because
you're still looking it up. Or, it could be 150, maybe 400.
A 2016 Gerber baby, ridiculously cute Michigan girl named Isla, beat out 170,000 other entries in the company's annual photo contest. It won her family $50,000 plus a bunch of kids' clothing and an opportunity to be featured into an ad. That was for the new Gerber baby.
In
2016. I don't even know what they paid the lady. They probably didn't pay her anything.
Yeah.
They didn't even have a list in there. So the question is, would you want your... So your face is on it. It's for one of the robots that's being built.
First off, the Gerber baby, that's no problem because you grow out of that face. People don't walk around and say, "Hey, at 42, aren't you the Gerber baby face?" So that's not even relevant to what's happening here. There is this company that is being hired, an engineering company that's looking for a friendly face that they want to put on this personalized robot.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is they want somebody, a face that will sort of exude confidence and reassurance and, just sort of this friendly demeanor. But
she's paid $7,500.
$7,500.
Pretty good, yeah.
Way back in 1928? Or whatever you said it was?
You have to ask again because I'm still looking for it. Keep going.
Okay. So there's this company that's willing to pay you
for
your face, but that means that your face could be on thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of robots. You basically would, everywhere you would go, people would go, "Hey, there's
that
my
guy.
Robot, or there's that guy, or there's that woman." We don't know which gender they'd go for. And it could devalue your face and overvalue your face at the same time. That if you actually have a face that everyone's seen a million times, is that a plus? If you are a media, whore, if you love the attention, you might think, "Oh, my God, this is the greatest." They're willing to pay you something like $127,000 for your face in perpetuity.
I wonder why they think 127, because according to poor people, that's a lot of money.
I don't know how they came up with that number, but I take it that you wouldn't do that. See, John, I think there are some people that are pretty vain that might think, wow, that would be cool, without really thinking about the ramifications. I think ramifications would be kind of negative, because it would either become too obvious or too samey, or you'd realize you'd be every year you'd have a People magazine update on, okay, well, now what's this perfect
what's
face
look like
doing
now?
Yes.
Go online, read an article, and then you scroll down the bottom. It's like, you won't believe what the celebrity looks like now. And you're like, oh, no, Jan Michael Vincent. Oh, no.
What happened
to you? But first they make you click through a bunch of stuff, which I'm sure is putting spyware on your phone. I'm like, but the steps I'm going to see what Gilligan looks like now.
Hey, no, click this.
God, I don't want to see that
guy.
Give
you a list. I know they give you a list, and like your 77th person is the person you get. But
see what Flip Wilson looks like. I'm like, well, okay.
But the other thing is, you might be like a Hollywood movie star from back then. We all have this ideal vision of Clark Gable or Cary Grant.
And then you look like hell at the end.
I know, but the thing is, our idea of it is not aged. It's that perfect rendition of you.
Yeah. But then what if you saw him?
Yes. Yeah.